Hello, everyone, and welcome. Today, we're tackling one of the more toxic patterns in our relationships, and it's called triangulation. Yes, like the triangle. Have you ever felt caught in the middle of this family dynamic and argument and found yourself venting to one person, maybe about another person who wasn't there, instead of facing the issue head on? I think we can all just say yes to that. And we've all experienced and or maybe even participated in triangulation. It's when two people avoid direct communication, instead pull a third person into their conflict, creating this rather messy triangle.
And so today we are diving into why triangulation matters to you. We're going to talk about what it really looks like and how it affects you and your relationships. And then as always, we're going to end with specific strategies for how you can break free from it. And you know what? We're not going to sugarcoat this one. It's actually a pretty tough pattern to deal with, especially in highly anxious families. But it is one that is worth deconstructing.
It's easy to get sucked into,
is the problem, right? Really easy.
Yeah.
By the end of this episode, you're going to have some specific tools on how to spot this pattern and get yourself out of it. So let's jump into this episode of Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
So I am really excited about today's episode because this is a topic that I think impacts every single one of us at some point or another in our lives.
Yeah, if you're not looking, it'll sneak up on you.
So after an experience I had this last weekend at my father's funeral, which I'm going to share with you later, I just thought, Robert, we need to do this topic. This is something we need to be talking more about. And I don't think we've talked about it really yet much or enough for sure.
Yeah, absolutely not. So the question you might ask is, why do I care about triangulation and why should you give us the next 30 minutes of your precious time to learn about and unpack this pattern? Well, because whether you realize it or not, you have been in this toxic triangle. You've created them and you've been drug into them by other people.
And it's already been costly for you.
Yes.
It has cost you trust. It has cost you your peace. You've probably seen it destroy relationships around you without really understanding why. It's likely the reason that you feel drained after family gatherings, or maybe why you tend to get stuck or sucked into workplace drama. So the other thing that we're going to talk a lot about today is that if you have kids, you may have unknowingly and unconsciously triangulated them into your own relationship dynamics, either with a spouse, a partner, a parent. And that has caused them, maybe without you realizing it, your children to feel bad, to feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's this sort of nasty little thing that sneaks up on you if you're not paying attention.
Yes.
So triangulation can show up in any of our relationships. We're talking marriage, we're talking dating, with our kids, with their parents, with your in-laws, even in the workplace relationships. So this episode is literally for everyone. You might want to listen and then re-listen to this episode because it's an important one, especially if you're someone who feels like the family drama follows you or you're always cleaning up someone else's emotional mess. Triangulation is one of those patterns that's really worth breaking so our next generation can have healthier, more honest relationships.
Okay, let me start with a story.
To quickly
illustrate what triangulation looks like.
Okay.
Okay, so triangulation is a toxic pattern in families, and it's been a big one in my own family of origin. It's something that I've had to work on because I would catch myself doing it a lot because it's kind of how I learned to be in relationships.
It's a habit.
It's a pattern that, well, yeah, an unconscious one, right? And one that's a habitual pattern when you get stressed or anxious or tensions are up, and it's just something you do. And I can remember this pattern as far back as I have memories, and that's because it really does start in families. It starts in early childhood, and it is one of those patterns that tends to cross generations, that it's a generational pattern. And I think it's important to understand this so that you can understand how you and how possibly your partner has even developed these patterns in the first place and how they've become so habitual as we've become adults.
Okay.
All right. So last weekend was my father's memorial service. He passed away 3 weeks ago after an 18-year battle with Parkinson's. And my dad, just for reference, I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the show before, we're a big family. So my dad had 7 children, 22 grandchildren. And as of right now, there's 29 great-grandchildren.
Yep.
Big crew.
There's a lot to keep track of.
So from a family, we're going to talk a lot about family systems today. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But from a family systems perspective, that many people, you see a lot of patterns. That can create a lot of drama, a lot of interesting family patterns that happen between lots of different people. There's people in that group that haven't spoken to each other in 15, 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. And it's interesting to be an observer of all of that. And so a couple hours after the burial, I got a text from a family member who is, by the way, someone who has not wanted to have a relationship with me for the last 4 years. Ironically, a triangulation happened at that time.
Yep.
That kind of led to that. That's a whole other story. But the text that I received said, "When are you leaving town? We need to talk." And so I was thinking, oh,
that's
gosh.
Ominous.
Yeah. Or I was actually hopeful. I was thinking maybe just we just gone through this funeral. Maybe this is a time for healing. We can sit down and reconnect and heal that old wound. But no, I was getting triangulated.
Yeah. I love your optimism. I thought it wasn't that at all.
Right. So yeah. I show up to talk to this person and this person proceeded to tell me all of her grievances with another family member, a third party. All about how this other person was behaving that she didn't appreciate and how she felt like this other person would likely cheat her out of some sort of inheritance or something that she thought that she would be getting. And she was trying to get me as an ally.
It's like an episode of Survivor over there.
Sometimes it is. Think about it. I was really upsetting because I think we had just buried my dad 3 or 4 hours earlier.
Yeah.
And so obviously I was really upset. I had been grieving all day and now I was getting triangulated into this ugly situation that I didn't want to be in. I had nothing to do with it. And I was really upset by that. And I also realized trying to give compassion and grace a little bit. I also had this second thought of, yes, but this is automatic behavior for this person.
Yeah.
This is how she learned to communicate, and how she grew up.
You've spent a lot of time sort of breaking that pattern.
Trying to, yeah. And still working on it to this day. And so I don't want to perpetuate these patterns. And so I have worked on it and I knew I needed to extend a little bit of grace here because this particular person hasn't done that work. And so this is an automatic behavior for her.
Let's talk a little bit about why the situation that Charlotte found herself in is an example of triangulation. The word triangulation comes from Murray Bohm's family systems theory, which takes a look at what family systems work, what makes them not work, what creates healthy systems, what creates unhealthy systems, and what creates multi-generational traumas and patterns. Bohm theorized that two-person system can become unstable at times when stress or tension arises in this two-person system. One of the individuals may try to stabilize the system by getting a third leg, a third person, which forms this triangle. But in reality, what we're trying to do is stabilize ourselves, trying to stabilize our own fears, our own anxieties, and our own insecurities. It's usually done to make ourselves feel better, but obviously it doesn't really work. It's not super effective. Instead of managing our own emotions and dealing directly with the primary person that we're having this conflict with, we bring in a third party, and this just creates discord.
Exactly. So in a triangle, what we're doing is we're pulling another person into the conflict, perhaps either looking for an ally, which is the situation that I was getting.
Usually looking for an
getting
ally.
Getting drug into. Uh-huh. Yep. Or maybe a confidant. We'll talk about some scenarios of that, especially with our children that we sometimes can do. Mm-hmm. Or a messenger. You're trying to relay a message to the other person because you're too chicken to do it yourself.
I was going
to
say because you're afraid to do it. But, yeah. Too chicken, that works.
And so triangulation can be a form of splitting where one person is pitting the third family member against the person that they're upset with in order to break their connection. Usually what they're doing is they're coming in and attacking the third person's character as a way to pit the one against the other and create this fissure between them. It can be a very manipulative tactic to be able to even engineer a rivalry between two people where it doesn't even exist.
I really think it's a manipulative tactic.
Well, generally, yes. Sometimes unknowingly, though. Not always with intent.
It also can be less obvious in things such as gossiping about someone, maybe venting frustrations about another person, usually in relationships we are venting about our spouse, which is not great. Asking someone to relay a message, asking someone maybe to get some information about this other person.
You see that, though, with children in divorce situations.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Tell me what your dad is doing. Yeah. Who is he with? Who's he dating?
Yeah.
What's he spending money on?
So typically the triangle is formed when the third party is being used as a substitute for direct communication and or as a messenger to carry the communication to the main party of interest. Mm-hmm. Triangles are so common in families that when you start looking for them, you see them everywhere.
You'll see them everywhere.
Every family event has a triangle happening.
I think so.
Nonstop.
At least in my family, it does.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
So here's another example that I'll give you from my life. This has happened in my childhood, my adulthood.
The beauty is you're replete.
I have
with examples.
So much content for this episode.
Yes.
So there have been times when my mom, for example, has had a suspicion about something she thought that I did, something maybe that she wouldn't like. And this has even been, I think this even happened just in the last year. So this wasn't just in childhood. But in this instance, she didn't have enough data and she was too chicken to come to me and talk to me directly about whatever she was concerned with. So she would pin it on someone else as the accuser. So she would call me up and she would say something like, "Sharla, your brother was just talking to me." Not true. "And he said that he was so upset because he said that you did XYZ.
Yep.
Okay.
You did a podcast on triangulation.
And this usually, whatever conversation she was relaying to me, never actually happened. It was just her way of trying to interrogate me without being direct.
Yes.
And using someone else as an excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's classic. Another example would be complaining to a family member about someone else. For instance, in a dysfunctional family where alcoholism is an issue, the non-drinking parent might go to the child and express some dissatisfaction about their partner, the drinking parent. They may also talk to the child about what should be done. And this could be confusing for the child because this is not the role that the child should take on.
No.
They shouldn't be making decisions about what their parent should or shouldn't
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
Right? And then they might become the parentified child where they feel the need to fix the drinking parent. Or they might take on the role of this pseudo spouse, becoming the confidant of the non-drinking parent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So now this child feels this heavy burden. This was,
which they shouldn't have in any instance.
No. And this was a pattern that I saw really escalate in my family after my parents divorced.
Yep.
So it was already there. And I'm sure my mom learned it from her mom. And I'm sure this was a generational pattern for many generations. But I saw it really escalate after my parents' divorce. My mom would come to the kids. There were three younger kids at the time of the divorce, myself and my two younger siblings. And she would frequently discuss very adult topics with us, most of which would paint my dad in a poor light, of course. And I suppose this was probably a way for her to try to gather the children as her allies or to make her feel maybe she was dealing with a lot of her own insecurities in a way that kind of helped to bolster her a little bit. But they were topics that were way too heavy for children. She talked about her jealousies and her money concerns, how much money he did or he didn't pay in child support. Yeah. She would sometimes have me get the checks. Sometimes I would have to be the one to deposit the checks. I often balanced her checkbook at the end of the year and figured out her expenses for her, which of course was showing me where my dad's failings were in some ways, at times, at least in her opinion. And so, she would sometimes, again, gather information for me about what your dad is doing. So there's just a ton of triangulation that was going on that was way too heavy for the children to be involved in.
Yeah. And that's actually a great example of triangulation.
Mm-hmm.
Just not a great way to do it. You can see how the outcome is rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for that. What we realize is the more stress that there is on the family system in the family unit, the more triangles get activated. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you look, people use others as sort of this go-between so that they can avoid having these direct and difficult conversations with other people in the family. Instead of breathing and calming ourselves down, we look for the cheat code, i.e. someone else we can just pull into our triangle to make our discomfort better so that we can avoid the difficult conversations, the difficult confrontations.
It's all about this discomfort.
And maybe just getting somebody on our side. So then we feel better about it.
It's all about that discomfort that we're trying to avoid. But the reality is we're creating so much more discord and discomfort in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And triangulation and enmeshment, which I know we need to define that, but they really do go hand in hand. Since that is some psychology language, let's go ahead and define what enmeshment means. Enmeshment is where personal boundaries get blurred and they're very unclear. So either we're lacking a containing boundary, so we're really intrusive in all of the other family's business, or we lack a personal boundary, so we're someone who takes things really personally. Everything everyone thinks around us is so, you know, it changes.
Just comes right in.
It comes right in.
We feel like we have to change.
So in enmeshed relationships, it's hard to separate one person's feelings and thoughts from another person's feelings and thoughts. So for example, if a daughter gets really anxious and say depressed, the mother instantly gets anxious and depressed. She can't separate her emotions and feelings from her daughter. And when families have these poor boundaries, they become controlling and very involved or over-involved in each other's lives. And of course, as you can kind of see, that enmeshment is going to obviously create more triangles, just as stress creates more triangles.
Just lots of little triangles. It's a patchwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be your family quilt.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Okay. So now what we want you to do is we want you to start identifying how and when you might be participating in triangles. Do you do it when you feel sort of shamed, or do you do it when you feel anxious, or when you're hurt, maybe when you feel left out or abandoned, or maybe you're afraid to just have a difficult conversation and go directly to this person? Then I want you to start thinking about what it might look like to have a more solid and mature relationship, because in healthy relationships, you work through your discomfort.
Key.
You breathe, you journal, you talk, maybe you talk to a coach or a therapist. And then you work up the courage to go directly to the person that's involved. That's what's healthy. That's what we want. And it's what we want to model for our children. And it's what we want you to model for your children.
Yeah. And I think that's a big point that we want to make today, is that you don't want to pass this pattern down and ultimately create another dysfunctional system, another system with lots of triangles, with a family quilt of triangles. You can probably imagine why we don't want to do that. Imagine. You can probably see already how unhealthy this is, but let's just talk about a few reasons really why this is so detrimental to children. So a child being pulled into a triangle, the child often feels guilt. They feel shame, and they might feel like they can't love one parent without being disloyal to the other parent. I know I felt that a lot growing up.
Absolutely. They as well.
Yeah, you too. I mean, you were in the same situation. The child might feel like they can't love both parents freely, because if they did, they would be in trouble, or they feel guilty for having too much love for the parent who's always the parent that's being triangulated.
Well, forced to make a choice.
Right. So it really just puts a heavy burden on a child. You know, adult problems are just too heavy for children. And this goes for adult children too. It doesn't just have to be minor children. This goes for adult children too. But even if the child seems fine with it, trust me, they're not. They're feeling an internal pressure to solve the problem or to take a side. And they're just not equipped to do that. They're not equipped to solve problems, adult problems. It's not their job to make a parent feel better because that parent is feeling discomfort. But they're going to think that they should. They're going to think that it is their responsibility.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So being triangulated, truly, because of all that, it's threatening the child's very sense of safety and security.
Yeah. Children are really meant to be co-regulated. They're supposed to be soothed and nurtured. They're not supposed to be the ones soothing their parents. And when children learn this in their childhood, the pattern continues into the next generation, because they now have a blueprint for resorting to passive aggressive patterns and manipulation in their own relationships when they get stressed. So they've learned these tools.
Yeah.
And now they just take them into their relationships. Totally. It's not what we want them to do.
Unconsciously, habitually, it just happens.
Yeah. They just learn that, and then they learn to manipulate, and then they just carry it on.
And when we create these cross-generational parent to child triangles to make ourselves feel better, I mean, as we've said, it just comes at the cost of the child, and it just keeps perpetuating that cycle, as Robert just said. And I could go back easily one generation, two generations, probably three generations, and see how these patterns have been passed down generationally in my own family. I can see how my own mother, and this gives you compassion if you do look at your whole family tree this way. You know, I can see how my mom grew up feeling insecure and a little bit abandoned because she was raised by a 16-year-old mom. And I can see how those feelings that she had led to her own insecurity that increased as a divorce happened, and how those insecure feelings would cause her to bring her children into her triangles to help her feel better. And so it's just going to keep jumping from generation to generation, creating this family dysfunction and discord all the way through, unless we decide to be the ones to stop it.
Yeah, absolutely. We really want to stop this cycle. We want you to sort of figure out a way to break this cycle. Mm-hmm. So if you feel scared or insecure, that belongs to you. We have to regulate, we have to breathe, we have to steady our own emotions, and we have to learn how to have clear and direct communication, especially with the people or persons that we have difficult issues to talk about with.
Yes, totally. So let's summarize what we've talked about so far, and then we'll talk about some strategies for breaking the cycle. Triangulation is a toxic pattern in family systems. It is dysfunctional, or we could say it's a maladaptive strategy for dealing with our own anxieties and our own negative emotions. And when we engage in it, what we're really doing is we're stunting our own emotional and psychological growth.
We're not learning how to stand on our own 2 feet.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
we're not learning how to have grown-up conversations, not learning how to learn how to talk to and have difficult conversations with people, because we're always bringing a buffer, whatever that is, buffer to the relationship, buffer to the conversation.
And then you're doing the same thing to your children, just like it's stunting your own emotional and psychological growth. It's stunting the children's emotional growth
without
as
a
well.
Doubt. Yeah.
Okay. So now let's talk about how to stop it. So first I want to be clear that there are some exceptions to what we've been saying today. So if you're, for example, in an abusive relationship, this doesn't apply to you. If you are in an abusive relationship, you actually do need to go to a third party and you do need to get help.
Yes.
Also, if you go to a therapist or a coach, that is not triangulation. So I want to be clear. You can still go to a therapist or a coach, and that's not an example of triangulation, because a therapist or a coach is not part of the family. They're not part of the system. And often they can be very helpful, actually, because they can have an objective view about the family system that the people within it don't have.
And they're more likely going to encourage you to stand on your own 2 feet and have a conversation with the people that you're maybe trying to, you know, talk to them about.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now we're going to share 4 practical strategies to change this pattern. And we'd like to invite you to just start with maybe just one, as we've done with most of our tips in the podcast. Just pick one. You don't have to pick all 4. And even if you start with just one, I think you'll start seeing shifts in your relationship dynamics. You'll be less likely to start triangles and less likely to get pulled into one. This will take some courage.
Yes, it will.
But it will set you up for healthier long-term relationships.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's recognizing it and then maybe even just extricating yourself from that. Okay. Strategy number 1, it's always awareness. This is because you've got to see it to stop it, and you can't change what you can't see. So if you were raised in a system where triangulation was normal, this is probably going to be a habitual pattern for you, and you might not even realize that you're doing it. But it can also stop with you.
Exactly. So maybe go back and listen to this episode again and then work on just that awareness. Become an observer of triangles. Now that you understand them, you're probably going to start seeing them everywhere. Notice when you are triangulating or when you're being pulled into a triangle, and ask yourself some really quality questions. Like, when do I participate in triangles?
Ooh.
When do I create them? And what emotions are driving it when I'm creating them? Am I avoiding a direct conversation? Why? Right. So pay attention to the emotions that are driving your behavior. Is it fear? Is it shame? Is it insecurity? What are you trying to get relief from? Because again, we start triangles because we're avoiding something. But the triangle, again, it's a maladaptive strategy. It's not going to make you feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you find yourself getting pulled into triangles, then you want to look at what's in it for you. What are you gaining from being pulled into this triangle? Do you let it happen because you feel wanted, because you want to feel more important? Where is the gain? Significance? Is it worth? And what would happen if you stop perpetuating this unhealthy family pattern?
Perfect. Going back to the situation that I got pulled into right after that funeral that I described earlier, I was obviously stressed, sad. I was probably exhausted, probably not my very best self at that moment. And so as this conversation started, I think I let it go too long before I stopped it. And so the first maybe minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I found myself like, I'm reasoning with this person. I'm trying to rationalize with this person, and I'm kind of having a conversation that I shouldn't be having. And then I found myself getting more and more dysregulated. And that's when I realized, stop, like you just got sucked into a triangle. So I paused for a few seconds. I recentered myself. I slowed down my breathing. I took that awkward silence where nothing was said for a good 10 seconds or so while I thought about what I was going to say. And then I set a boundary, which we're going to talk about in just a second. So, but for me, that awareness had to kick in. And then it was all about the pause. I needed that pause to be able to get my bearings and to be able to think about what I was going to say, to bring my prefrontal cortex back online.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Rather than reacting just impulsively from my lizard brain. And I needed a second to come up with my response.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, the first step is really just to build awareness. Yeah.
Okay. Strategy number one we just talked about was awareness. Strategy number two is now you have to set clear boundaries. This means you have to stop the conversation with the person that is triangulating you and let them know nicely, I'm not going to listen to this. So if someone tries to pull you into their conflict, you could gently redirect and say something like, you know, I hear you're upset and I understand that you're upset, but I think you should talk to name the person, whoever it is, about this. I don't want to be in the middle of this. This has nothing to do with me. I think you need to go directly to them.
And I think that's the thing we have to realize about being triangulated is we're in the middle, mm-hmm. You know, and that's the part about a triangle. It doesn't look like you're in the middle, but you really are the monkey in the middle. Either you're trying to give communication or you're trying to give,
you know, support
or buffer or whatever. And I love the way you put that. Usually I'll just say, it seems like this is a conversation you need to have with someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I love how that you brought the compassion into that. For me, I love to avoid being triangulated as much as possible. Yeah. So I'll often say, I think this is a conversation best had with a person of interest. And it seems like you're upset. Maybe you should, you know, do you want to go for a walk and we can just calm down? And doesn't mean that I think you need to extract yourself from that situation. I think you just need to avoid the triangle.
Yes.
Right. You don't have to stop talking. You don't have to stop being friends.
Right.
You just avoid anything that happens in that triangle.
Because it doesn't have anything to do with you.
Yeah. It's not yours.
You're really good at doing that. Just drawing that boundary and having that direct, we're not going to talk about this, but you do it. You're not rude when you do it, but I've heard you do it many times. And I think it's because you're so sensitive to manipulation. You're so sensitive to that you're like, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go there.
Well, and, you know, if you grew up like me with a lot of manipulation, you're
sensitive.
You did as well, but yeah.
So that's exactly what I did after the situation that happened at the funeral. I just said, I can see you're upset, but this doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't want to be involved with this. I think you need to have this conversation with the person directly. And that's important. Yeah. You should go do that. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's also important to mention they're probably very likely going to be upset with you.
Yeah.
I don't think this person was very happy with me in that moment.
Well, they're looking for an ally.
And I didn't give that to her. And so I think she huffed off. But I have to be okay with that too. I have to stabilize myself and stand on my own 2 feet when I don't get the response that I wanted. I'm not likely going to get validated for setting a boundary.
No.
And you probably won't either.
Yeah. Okay. Strategy number three, practice direct communication. I think that's the reason I had that, mm-hmm. this topic, because I love direct communication.
Yeah.
And this is when you really start to break this triangulation system, because you're exchanging this maladaptive strategy for a healthy strategy. And you're facing that thing that you've been trying to avoid. Instead of talking to everyone else over here, mm-hmm. when you want to be talking to this person, you just need to gather the courage, gather your strength, and face the hard conversation with the person that you're having the problem with.
Totally.
Yep. As we've talked about in past episodes, we recommend using the feedback wheel whenever you can. And you can learn more about that in episode 103 This skill is super important when it comes to giving feedback and managing repair.
And just having direct.
Yeah,
direct absolutely. Communication. Yeah, so that's a really good episode.
If you're struggling with direct communication, I don't know how to start. I don't know what to say. That episode's going to give you some great information.
And I will. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. Perfect. And I would definitely recommend going back and listening to that one.
So
again,
when you do confront somebody, you want to start with I statements and avoid blame, but still be clear and direct. And, you know, and if you're new to this, we always recommend with maybe start by writing out a script of the things that you want to say, plan ahead, and then you can take some deep breaths. You can lean into the discomfort, and it's okay if it's not perfect.
Yeah, totally. Right?
But people appreciate direct communication.
I know.
They really do. It isn't something that comes easy for most people, and it's a skill that you have to build. It's a skill that you have to build over time with practice. It's just like a muscle. It's just like anything that you do well. And maybe I've learned to do that well because I've practiced it a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. All right. So strategy number four, the last strategy for breaking this pattern, is you might want to do some of your own work. Robert and I have had to do a lot of our own work to break this pattern.
Yep.
Because triangulation stems from childhood patterns where we probably were, you know, creating this maladaptive strategy for some reason, or we were seeking love, or we were seeking security and unhealthy ways, there is a history that's there that probably needs to be healed. How we relate to others has everything to do with how we relate to ourselves. When people are enmeshed, it's because they have poor psychological boundaries themselves. And it's inner work that they need to do themselves to be able to break that enmeshment and break those unhealthy patterns that they have with other people. So do your own work. I've had to work through a lot of my own baggage, as has Robert. I've had to confront a lot of my own patterns and behaviors. And if you were a child, for example, who was triangulated into things that should not have concerned you, then you've likely been carrying a weight and a burden and a responsibility that isn't yours and it was never yours. And it's time to let that go. And you can release it. So get a coach, get a therapist, go get some self-help books, but just know that it isn't yours. And the work that you will do is not just for you. It's for the next generation. It's about healing your inner child and letting go of burdens that aren't yours, because you do deserve that freedom. And so do the people around you that you love. They deserve that healthy relationship with you as well.
Yeah. You know, clarity is kind. We think that it's not. People think being clear with somebody is cruel, but being ambiguous is cruel because it leaves people, it just cuts their anchor.
Yeah.
They're floating, trying to figure out which direction you want them to paddle. So if you want, you know, we would all much rather have somebody try to find a kind way to tell me that I'm doing something that they dislike than hear it from a coworker. Like, oh, well, did you hear that Andrea says that you do this and they don't like it? And we're like, man, I really wish they would have come to me. I would have really respected that. And I really would have been happy to change that pattern.
But then going back to what I just said too, healthy people want feedback.
Yes.
People who have healed their past want feedback. Sometimes if we still have a lot of our own baggage, we actually don't want feedback. You know, I was thinking just
Or if the feedback that we've received has always been really harsh.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that again goes back to that point of, you know, do your own work.
Yeah.
Do your own work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's been a lot to unpack today with awareness, with boundaries, direct communication, some personal work. You know, if you do these things, you can build relationships that feel very safe, very real, and you have lots of ability to give feedback and break these patterns.
Yeah.
Here's our challenge for you today. Pick one of the strategies this week, and maybe it's just spotting triangulation, or maybe setting a boundary, or maybe even having a direct conversation with somebody instead of going around the corner.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you guys for being here today. If this episode resonated with you, please subscribe to the show. We'll have another episode out next Wednesday. So be sure to subscribe so you get that notification. Leave us a review, a rating, a 5-star rating really helps us to reach more couples who do need to hear these messages each week. And share this episode with others so that we can continue to help more families to have secure, healthy relationships.
As always, be kind to each other, put each other first, Remember, it's the small things done often that create the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.